This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space, and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
and GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. In this hour, we're going to be talking about one of the greatest secrets, one of the darkest secrets in all of science, and that is brain science. You know, of all the sciences in medicine, perhaps the field that was slowest to develop is neurology. Because after all, the brain is encased in a skull. You just can't do experiments on the human brain. And we're going to talk about a very dark history of brain science going back to the turn of the century. With us today is Luke Dittrich, author of an exciting book called Patient HM, a story of memory, madness, and family secrets. So we're going to talk about an operation that was done back in 1953 that had enormous scientific as well as personal consequences about the nature of brain science. And by the way, if you want to know more about my work, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 3 million fans on Facebook. And I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers. One of my bestsellers was The Future of the Mind, where he actually mentioned the strange case of Henry Molaison and also what it means for the future of brain research. And so our story, first of all, begins way back in the 1800s when there was a railroad worker by the name of Phineas Gage. And he was a railroad worker in an unfortunate accident involving dynamite. A piece of dynamite exploded in his face. There was a large iron rod which went right through his skull, right through his eye, came up the back of his head, and he survived. Who would have thought? Who would have thought somebody could survive an accident where a large metal rod goes right through your skull, right through your eye, comes out the back of your brain, and you survive to talk about it? Well, this has tremendous scientific value, because before then, scientists did not know where the seat of consciousness was. The Greeks, for example, thought maybe it was the heart, not the brain at all. And when the ancient Egyptians mummified bodies, they simply discarded the brain because they didn't think the brain was very useful at all. But that all changed with Phineas Gage because his personality began to change. He survived the accident. Can you imagine that? Having this gigantic metal rod go right through your skull, he survived the accident, and his personality changed. According to eyewitness accounts, he became very abusive, swore a lot, was not the likable kind of guy that he used to be, and that began a revolution in brain science, when scientists began to realize that it was the brain, not the heart, not someplace else, that was a seed of human consciousness. But where is the seed of memory? Well, we also had a very sad chapter in science, the science of lobotomies, when spikes would be driven right through the human skull in hopes of helping people who were schizophrenic or suffer from epilepsy. And we're going to talk about one such patient, patient HM, the subject of the book that we're going to be talking about today. And it lives on. The memory of that patient lives on in Hollywood, believe it or not. Perhaps you've seen the movie 50 First Dates. Perhaps you've seen the movie Groundhog Day, in which this poor person has to repeat over and over and over again the same day all over again. Well, with us today to talk about this is Luke Dittrich. He's a contributing writer at the New York Times Magazine, and he's the author of the book that we're discussing today, Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. So, look, first of all, how did you first get interested in the whole question of brain science and writing about patient HM? What got you started?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's a thrill to be on with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as what got me interested in this particular story, my grandfather was the surgeon who basically, in a lot of ways, created Patient HM. He transformed this young man, Henry Mollison, with this sort of radical experimental operation into the human research subject that he became. Patient HM, after my grandfather's operation in 1953, was intensively studied by hundreds of scientists for the rest of his life until he passed away in 2008, at which point his brain became sort of the object of intense scrutiny as well. So given that my grandfather was directly involved in his case, it had always been sort of a part of my family lore. But I didn't really realize that it was also part of sort of the broader kind of scientific lore, I think, until college, when I was dating a girl who was a psychology major, and she had mentioned something about Patient HM, and I said, oh, well, that was actually, my grandfather was involved in that case. And so that was kind of my first inkling that it was something that more than the people in my family were interested in. And it was a story that kind of gnawed at me as I became a journalist and began kind of, writing stories sometimes about the history of science for a living. It was something that I always wanted to tackle. But while Patient HM was still living, it was very difficult because he was sort of this, his privacy and access to him were kind of zealously protected by the researchers who studied him. So I tried and failed to get access to him while he was alive. And it wasn't, strangely, until he had passed away, that suddenly kind of the floodgates opened and I was able to really, learn about him and about his life in ways that I never would have been able to while he was still living, unfortunately.
Well, a lot of people get their knowledge about brain science from the movies. And as I mentioned, we have 51st Dates, where Drew Barrymore has to relive that same first date over and over and over again for the rest of her life. But, and we also have the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where Jack Nicholson is a rowdy kind of person. But in order to shut him up, they lobotomize his brain. They stick a spike through the brain and they cut the cords, and he becomes like a zombie afterwards. So now take us back. Take us back to the year 1953, when we had this epileptic gentleman, Mr. Mollison, and take us back to what he was like before and after that fateful day.
Sure. So Henry was severely epileptic. He was at the time of the operation, he was 27 years old, and his life, scientists actually argue about kind of the root cause of his epilepsy, but most people agree that it was probably caused by a concussion he received when he was 8 or 9 years old. He was walking home from the playground in Hartford, Connecticut, and he was knocked down by a speeding bicyclist, hit his head very hard, was knocked unconscious for about 5 minutes, and shortly afterwards began experiencing minor seizures. And then as the years progressed, they became more and more major, until by the time he was 16 or so, he was really debilitated by these, major epileptic seizures that would occur sometimes several times a day. It kind of, derailed his life in a lot of ways, academically, socially, professionally. And so he and his family...
Okay, Luke, we're going to have to take a short commercial break,
sure.
But after the break, we get right back to your book, Patient HM.
Perfect. Thank you.
And once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic. And if you want to get on the show, give us a call. The hotline number is 612 562-564-8135. Give us a call and you may get on national radio.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
When you have a pain in the neck, a real pain in the neck, back, shoulder, or legs, you now have two convenient choices to get fast relief without taking another pill. Because now, Sunny Bay heating wraps and pillows are available at both Amazon and Walmart. Yes, see Sunny Bay's 4.5 to 5-star customer reviews on Amazon.com or Walmart.com. Our made in the USA microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it. Even while driving, Sunny Bay wraps will not burn and stay balanced to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to help treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part? Sunny Bay quality products start at under $20. Join thousands of happy customers and see why Sunny Bay products have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. It's easy. Click Amazon or Walmart and search today for Sunny Bay.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're going to talk about a fascinating but very dark piece of science. We're going to go back to the year 1953 when a fateful operation was done on a gentleman who basically lost his short-term memory. You've probably seen the movie 51st Dates and realized that back then in 1953, the whole concept of lobotomy was taken as a valid scientific endeavor. Amazing. You realize the Nobel Prize in medicine was the man who pioneered this rather grotesque form of therapy. You take people who are epileptic or have schizophrenia or seizures, and you stick a spike up their brain and cut off many of their nerve endings, and they become a zombie afterwards. It was such a horrible operation that it was actually banned first in the Soviet Union for being inhumane. But it did leave a legacy. Tens of thousands of lobotomized people back in the 40s and 50s. And now we get to patient Henry Molaison, a man who actually made the history books. He's perhaps one of the most celebrated figures in the history of neurology. So with us today is Luke Dittrich, author of the book, Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. And he's the grandson of the surgeon who actually performed the experiment. So, Luke, we talked now about what happened with the accident. He was epileptic. He had convulsions that were debilitating. Then they performed the operation on him. And what was he like now after the operation?
So after the operation, and even really during the operation, since he was conscious during the operation, as soon as my grandfather made the final cuts, basically, as soon as he completed his resection of the medial temporal lobes, most importantly the hippocampus, but also the amygdala and the uncus, Henry became unable to create new long-term memories. Basically, he lived the rest of his life, more than a half century, in a more or less 30-second increments. The present would just sort of slide off of him. In a lot of ways, you could say his life really ended in 1953 when he was on that operating table, 27 years old, even though, you know, he lived many, many more years. Nothing really stuck from then on, which was, as you can imagine, absolutely tragic for Henry. It was, though, at the same time, this illuminating and revelatory moment in the history of science. Up until that moment, nobody really knew what specific brain structures were necessary to create new memories, new episodic memories. And as a result of that operation, it became very clear that without the structures that my grandfather removed, you could not create new long-term memories. So that allowed people to basically correctly deduce that those structures were essential for memory creation.
Now, before this tragic operation, people thought that memories were stored throughout the brain, not in one localized area. But since the operation took place near the hippocampus, people began to realize that, well, maybe there was a central gateway, a central entrance into the human brain. But meanwhile, he could play the piano. Can you imagine somebody without a short-term memory who can play the piano? So this was a revolution, right? A revolution in our understanding of how memory is stored in the living brain, right?
That is absolutely correct. And one of the fascinating, basically, Henry's case led to two revolutions in our understanding of how memory works. The first one was what I described. We people suddenly realized that we needed these structures to create new long-term memories. The second was that although Henry's memory in that respect was radically compromised, and he was, you know, basically a pure anterograde amnesiac, there were other forms of memory that he still had access to. He could still create new so-called procedural memories. He could learn new tasks like, you know, riding a bike, that sort of thing, where you don't necessarily need conscious recollection of specific episodes to learn how to do something. So not only did Henry's case, you know, prove that these structures were essential for the creation of new episodic memories, it also proved that those structures were not necessary for the creation of new procedural memories. So these were two of the sort of seminal findings that were built out of the study of patient HM.
Now, what would it be like to actually talk to him and about his self-image? I understand that he kept thinking that he was still 20-something years old, even in his 80s, when he was 80-something years old. And when he looked in a mirror, he was horrified to realize, oh my God, I'm 80-something, when his memory told him that he's 20-something. So it must have been a traumatic experience, right, that your own self-image was incorrect, that everything you knew about reality was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, it really, there were aspects of his existence that must have been nightmarish. Whether or not this is a good or a bad thing, his emotional reaction to those sorts of events appeared to be somewhat blunted as well. And that may be, you know, it's the mixed blessing, maybe, but it may be as a result of the removal of his amygdala, which also is, you know, often involved in emotional reactions. So although he would be surprised and maybe you could say shocked when he would look in the mirror and see how much older he was than he expected to be, he didn't appear to be traumatized or emotionally hurt by it so much. But still, yeah, there are so many aspects to his life that appear horrifying when you think about it. I mean, this is a man who probably learned more times than anyone else in history that his parents had passed away, for example, because that was one of the things that researchers would do in order to see whether or not even the most kind of emotional moments would stick. They would tell him repeatedly that his parents had died, and each time it was sort of a fresh shock.
Okay, now I've seen a few movies that are more or less loosely based on him. In one movie, based in Japan, by the way, the heroine goes to sleep and wakes up reliving the exact same day over and over again. She goes to sleep and then relives that same day, forgets everybody she met the previous day, and that, of course, leads to things like 51st dates. But is that really the way it was with Mr. Malaysan? I mean, how long, how many minutes, how many hours could he hold a memory before he had to redo that memory all over again from scratch?
Well, it varied. Basically, he would hold things for as long as he paid attention to them. So if you asked him to, say, remember the number 137, and then you walked out of the room and he constantly repeated to himself 137, 137, 137, he could do that potentially for hours as long as he kept that routine going in his mind. But as soon as he was distracted by something else, if he heard a loud noise and turned around and directed his attention to something else, then that command would leave him almost instantly. So the rough amount of time that people generally use is about 30 seconds, but really it could be shorter or considerably longer than that, depending on how focused he was on whatever it was he was trying to remember. But generally, he could, you know, generally things, if you were having a conversation with him and got up to go get a cup of coffee, you would come back 2 minutes later and he would say, "Hi, my name's Henry. What's your name?"
Okay. Now, in the movies, the heroine or hero falls asleep and the next day repeats that same day all over again. So that's not the way it was with Henry, right? You're talking about it varied depending upon the memory, depending upon the situation. It could be seconds, it could be minutes, it could be days, that he could retain memory.
It would vary, and there were odd things that would sort of stick as well. I mean, he had vague notions of major historical events happening, for example, even though the Kennedy assassination, for example, took place long after his operation, he would sometimes tell researchers that he thought a president had been assassinated in Dallas, although he couldn't tell them the details of it. And researchers...
Okay, Luke, we have to take yet another short commercial break.
Sure.
But after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of your book, Patient HM. Once again, our special guest is Luke Dittrich. We're talking about one of the greatest incidences in the history of brain science and neurology. And if you want to get on Science Fan, fantastic. To ask a question, give us a call at 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters of the radio station you're listening to, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on national radio.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today. Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with John.
The country's top immigration official blamed the sanctuary policies of New York City for the sexual assault and killing of a 92-year-old woman, while the mayor's office decried such rhetoric as fear, hate, and attempts to divide. Matthew Albience, the acting director of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, said at a news conference the slaying could have been prevented if the city officials had complied with a federal request to turn over the assailant, a Guyanese national, for deportation. Albion said, "It's unbelievable. I have to come here and plead with the city of New York to cooperate to help keep their city safe. Make no mistake," he added, "it is the city's policies that are the sole reason this criminal was allowed to roam the streets freely and end an innocent woman's life." NASDAQ, the New York Stock Exchange, and the S&P 500 all continue to have record-breaking weeks. This is USA Radio News.
Got an old car? You can donate it, whether it's running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation and save a life. They'll even come and pick it up for free. The United Breast Cancer Foundation has saved hundreds of women's lives through their free or low-cost breast screen exams. But now they need your help. The United Breast Cancer Foundation wants to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And donating your old car, SUV, or truck, whether it's running or not, helps pay for them. Plus, you get a charitable tax deduction. Help the United Breast Cancer Foundation save lives by donating your old car, SUV, or truck. Call now for free pickup. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. Call right now. That number again is 800-280-2144.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So how'd it go for Jake?
Did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. We have with us Luke Dietrich, whose grandfather performed one of the most famous or infamous experiments ever conducted on the living human brain. We're talking about a book, a new book called Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. And by the way, if you want to know more about my work, go to my website. Once again, it's mkaku.org, mkaku.org. I've written 4 New York Times bestsellers. One of them, The Future of the Mind, actually references this whole rather dark episode in the history of neurology, where we had this rather unsuspecting poor patient, patient HM, who makes history when an operation is performed on his brain, cutting an area, roughly the area where the hippocampus is located, and we now realize that that's where many short-term memories are processed. So we begin to realize that our concept of memory was incorrect, that everything we thought we knew about memory and the human brain was actually wrong, because here we have a living, breathing patient whose operation went awry, but as a consequence, scientists were able to study him and piece together the nature of memory. So, Luke, before the break, we talked about certain parts of the brain. Tell us a little bit about the hippocampus. Some people think that the hippocampus is, quote, the royal gateway to the brain, where short-term memories are processed first. But, well, what have we learned about the nature of how short-term memories are processed and then gradually become long-term memories?
Sure. So one of the things that fascinated me when I was, you know, when I was working on this book was understanding kind of both the level of ignorance that existed in 1953 regarding kind of the function of the hippocampus, but also learning that there was, despite the fact that nobody really knew what it did, even at the time, lots of people thought it must do something extremely important because it was just this centrally located, and some people even would reference it as being sort of this aesthetically beautiful structure in the brain that appeared to have connections to all sorts of other parts of the brain. And people like my grandfather, who, you know, we talked a little bit about the lobotomy, you mentioned the history of the lobotomy, and you also started off this conversation talking about Phineas Gage, which I thought was great because, you know, Phineas Gage was this seminal character who had this accidental brain damage. What distinguishes somebody like Phineas Gage from somebody like Patient HM was that Patient HM's brain damage was sort of willful and intentionally caused. And it was, and his case grew out of this long period, this kind of campaign of human experimentation that my grandfather and a number of other prominent lobotomists were conducting in the 1940s and 1950s. That were partly for purely sort of therapeutic reasons, but also they viewed the lobotomy as this sort of experimental method also that might enable them to kind of glean the functions of these structures that they were removing. But they found it was very difficult actually. You know, my grandfather removed the hippocampi of numerous sort of psychotic asylum dwellers, rendered them just as profoundly amnesic as Henry prior to operating on Henry, but didn't realize, because they were so deeply disturbed to begin with, didn't realize how amnesic they had become because they were so difficult to study. So what distinguished Henry from these other sort of patients was the fact that he was psychologically normal. And so what the hippocampus does, I mean, in sort of shorthand.
Okay, Luke, we have to take yet another short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue with Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. So once again, our special guest is Luke Dittrich. The book is Patient HM. And this is Science Fantastic.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Warning, don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build for your business to grow, call General Steel today for a pre-engineered steel building designed for your needs. No wasted space. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building. And you can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction. As much as half. But you must call now. If you need a church building, office, warehouse, manufacturing space, retail space, or more, call General Steel today. You can still get the General's 50-year structural warranty and General Steel quality, all at a price you can afford. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great.
800-965-1295. 800-965-1295. 800-965-1295. That's 800-965-1295.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
I'm here with Scott Jusseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're going to be talking about a rather dark chapter in the history of science, which then illuminated so many secrets of the living brain. The book we're talking about is called Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. Our special guest today is Luke Dittrich, who is the grandson of the surgeon who actually performed these, well, either hideous or revealing experiments. So we have to go back to 1953, a time when lobotomies were considered pathbreaking research. Today we might consider them to be unethical, even horrendous, but back then, well, the Nobel Prize was given to the person who pioneered the lobotomy. So, Luke, take us back once again, back to the 40s and 50s, and put Henry Molaison in context of what was being done with lobotomies.
Sure. So the lobotomy really caught fire in the 1940s, and my grandfather was among its early kind of proponents and proselytizers. He eventually became the second most prolific lobotomist of all time after Walter Freeman. Now, my grandfather, as I discovered while working on my book, was actually driven to become a so-called psychosurgeon or lobotomist as a result of this very kind of deeply personal family, whether you want to call it tragedy or hardship. My grandmother, his wife, was mentally ill, and was actually institutionalized in asylums for quite some time. And he, sort of embarked on this quest to perfect the lobotomy in the hopes that he might one day figure out a way to, you know, cure the mental illness of my grandmother. And that seemed to sort of fuel his increasingly radical experimental efforts in the back wards of asylums all over the country, certainly, and in some cases all over the world. And so Henry came right at the height of this period of experimentation that he was engaged in. And although Henry himself was not psychologically ill, he had epilepsy, he didn't have a mental illness, my grandfather did hope that this type of medial temporal lobotomy that he had sort of pioneered in asylums might be effective in helping cure Henry's epilepsy. But he also hoped that it might help him understand the functions of these structures that he would be removing, because Henry was quote unquote a normal. So Henry would be able to talk about what he had lost in sort of a more lucid way than a psychotic patient of his might be able to talk. And my grandfather realized that there was career-making opportunity in helping figure out what these structures did at, in some cases, you know, the high costs for his patients, clearly. But at the time, you know, notions of informed consent were very different, and my grandfather sort of straddled this dark divide between medical research and medical practice, as a lot of prominent doctors did at the time. I mean, and, you know, I think it's good to keep in mind, though, that the lobotomy, as horrific as it seems to us now, was at the time sort of the best option, seemingly, for some of these people. The antipsychotic drugs that we have today simply didn't exist. What ultimately made the lobotomy go out of fashion, starting in the mid-1950s, was not sort of outrage over the operation so much as it was sort of the advent of effective antipsychotic medication such as Thorazine, which was originally marketed as a chemical lobotomy. So it was a dark and complicated time. I try my best not to engage in sort of presentism. I know it's easy to kind of look down our noses at what people were doing in the past, but at the same time, I can't help but be somewhat horrified by the attitudes that prevailed at the time.
So what happened to these tens of thousands, not just one or two, but tens of thousands of people who were lobotomized? If you saw the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson, basically in that movie anyway, lobotomy was presented as a way to shut up unruly patients, that you became a zombie. You became a very passive zombie after your brain structures were sliced up with this spike in the brain. Well, let's take a short commercial break, and after the break, we'll continue with our special guest, Luke Dittrich, and we'll talk about medical ethics. Is it really ethical to do these kinds of experiments, even though we learn so much? And this is Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters of the radio station you're listening to, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on almost 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. So stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Message and data rates may apply.
Help! Seriously, I'm too young for hair loss.
My hairline keeps creeping back. Receding?
I got this bald spot. Ugh, it's thinning everywhere.
I'm gonna have to give up and shave it.
Dude, put down the razor, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration expert, is about to give you your real hair back permanently. Don't ignore the signs of hair loss. Bosley is giving away an absolutely free information kit that reveals all the signs and a free gift card to anyone who texts KIT 88 to 85850. Bosley will show you for free how great your hair could look. Using the latest technology, Bosley's solution to hair loss is permanent and protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Plus, since Bosley has new non-surgical options, you owe it to yourself to text now for an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off, no matter what level of hair loss you have. Text KIT 88 to 85850. KIT 88 to 85850.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, our special guest today is Luke Dittrich, author of a fascinating book called Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. We should point out that he's a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine, and the book is about this unfortunate patient, Patient HM, who suffered from severe epilepsy and convulsions, and in desperation, the doctors performed an operation by slicing up a very important part of the brain, including the hippocampus, and as a consequence, he basically lost his short-term memory. Imagine having the same conversation over and over and over again. Hollywood was fascinated by the story. That's why we have movies loosely based on Patient HM, movies like Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, or 51st Dates with Drew Barrymore. And yes, there really was this person, Henry Molaison, who after this operation was unable to form long-term memories. Even though he could play the piano, he had certain long-term memories intact, but he would forget who you were as soon as he was introduced to you. So, Luke, let's say a few things about medical ethics. Today, of course, we can thumb our nose at the ethics of the past, but back then, isn't it true that doctors had good intentions, that we had all these people who were mentally ill, that suffered from epilepsy, and we were powerless to do anything about it. And here's this Nobel Prize winner saying that the way to do it is to slice up the living brain. So from our perspective, isn't it easy to condemn these experiments, even though they had horrific results?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right that it is very easy to kind of be aghast at the past, and that they were doing the best that they could in most cases with the knowledge that they had, which was not as extensive as the knowledge that we now have. That said, I do think by almost any measure there were some people who, you know, overstepped kind of universal boundaries. I think there was this attitude that developed at the height of the lobotomy, where patients were viewed really more as guinea pigs than as human beings. I mean, there's this quote from one lobotomist that I opened my book with, a guy named Paul Busey, who used to operate on monkeys and then sort of transformed into a lobotomist. And after working with humans, he wrote, "Man is certainly no poorer as an experimental animal merely because he can talk." And I think that sort of encapsulated in a lot of ways sort of the darker aspects of the attitude that developed among some surgeons, including, unfortunately, my grandfather. Now, the questions of sort of the ethics of this and informed consent are complicated. In a lot of ways, I would say that patient HM, Henry, that my grandfather did not violate his informed consent. Henry kind of was provided with enough information to know that this was an experimental operation. He knew it was going to be risky. He did not have any clue, nobody did really, what the outcome might be. But he did consent to it, for better or for worse, certainly from his perspective, for worse. I think the issues surrounding medical ethics actually become much murkier and more interesting and in some ways darker as the years went on and as Henry kind of lived on as a research subject. And researchers from multiple institutions began kind of building their careers in many cases sort of on the backs of their privileged access to Henry, and he became this sort of golden scientific goose in a lot of ways. I discovered, for example, that MIT, which was the institution which studied him for more decades than any other, for a period of more than a decade, worked with him extensively while having him alone sign the kind of informed consent forms for the research that they were conducting with him. Now, this was a guy who, as we've discussed, can only maintain things in his mind for about 30 seconds. He would forget the beginning of an informed consent form by the time he got to the end. And he also was missing his amygdala, which would make him more docile and tractable and willing to consent to almost anything. So that sort of thing I found repeatedly would come up where he was arguably exploited and used in ways that are sad looking back on. Again, he provided us with a great deal of information, a fount of information in return. So it's a difficult problem to weigh.
Yes, and isn't it true that these patients become very docile, became very docile after being lobotomized, and therefore were not really cognizant of any consent forms they might sign after the lobotomy. They became like zombies. They were functioning human beings, but at a very low level, very low IQ, very low responsive level, and any consent form they would sign at that point was basically useless. But, what are your thoughts about that? After these operations, were there any attempts to make life more humane for these people that basically lost a piece of their brain?
Yeah, I mean, there were different steps were taken at different institutions and in different hospitals. And there were actually many different types of lobotomies which had sort of variable effects as well. I mean, there were some that were truly kind of grotesque and would end up obliterating large swaths of the frontal lobes. And then there were other ones which, you know, my grandfather, I guess to his credit, tried to develop a more precise and localized one that didn't have quite as many blunting effects. But it still did have insidious effects.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Once again, our special guest is Luke Dittrich, and we're talking about a book, Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. A story of a victim of, some rather strange experiments that created an explosion of scientific research in the nature of memory and the human brain. But what a price. What a price this person had to pay. So, Luke, once again, thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic. The book, once again, is Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may
allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-301-5435. That's 800-301-5435. 800-301-5435.